Good day, and welcome to the Mail.ru Group 2Q 2021 financial results conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tatiana. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you all, and welcome to Mail.ru Group second quarter unaudited financial results conference call. I'm joined by Борис Добродеев, Matthew Hammond, Fёдор Рубцов, Владимир Габрилян, and Владимир Никольский. In light of the still elevated number of COVID cases in Russia, as a precautionary measure aiming to support and protect our staff and their families, we're again working remotely at least until the end of August versus the hybrid working regime we started testing earlier this summer. This means that we are yet again presenting from multiple different locations. Hence, coordination during Q&A might cause some minor delays in our responses, and we kindly ask you to pose one question at a time to keep things manageable on our end. We will certainly take time to answer all of your follow-up questions, and thank you in advance for your understanding and cooperation. Before I pass it on to Matthew, I will read the safe harbor statement. Please note that our results press release contains statements of expectations and other forward-looking statements regarding future events or future financial performance of the group. The forward-looking statements in the release are based on various assumptions that are inherently subject to significant uncertainties and contingencies, which are difficult or impossible to predict and may be beyond the group's control. Many factors could cause actual results to differ materially from those discussed in the forward-looking statements, including those referenced under risk factors in the group's public filings. We would like to direct you to read the forward-looking disclaimer at the back of our release, particularly with respect to the possible differences between management and IFRS accounts. Matthew, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us. I'm going to make a series of comments about the major divisions, and then we'll give as much time as we possibly can for Q&A and answers all of your questions. In Q2 2021, our group was facing very different base effects across the various business lines versus last year as a result of last year's pandemic and related lockdowns. This meant an easy comp for advertising, but much tougher comps for games, IVAS, and education technology service revenues, which account for over 50% of the group's revenues. Notwithstanding this, we've continued to expand our business at a healthy rate of 17.4%, delivering nearly 30 billion in revenue in Q2, with EBITDA 6.7 billion and a 22.2% margin, and no change to the full year 2021 guidance. I'll now provide a few comments on each area and as much color as we can. Advertising revenues grew by almost 39% year-over-year in Q2, exceeding 11 billion, which marked further acceleration versus the 22% growth in Q1, which was the fourth quarter of acceleration. The best performing verticals in Q2 were services, sports and fitness, business, media, FMCG, education, and work, with some of them showing triple-digit growth rates. While the relative underperformers were telcos, games, dating, beauty, and jewelry. Much of this was a function of the high Q2 2020 base effect. Performance advertising was the major driver, growing by almost 70% year-over-year versus 41% in Q1. We continue to place major efforts and resources into the SMB advertising sub-segment, which expanded revenues by 56% year-over-year, but with very significant room for further growth, as SMBs still account for less than a quarter of our total ad revenues, while most local businesses have active pages within our social networks. Within advertising formats, we are highly focused on video, with 84% growth of in-stream video ad revenues in Q2 versus 36% in Q1. In terms of outlook, April marked a peak in ad revenue growth as a function of the easiest comp, with growth starting to normalize in May, and we expect it to further normalize in Q3 and more so in Q4. IDFA-related changes are currently having no visible impact on our core domestic ad business. iOS accounts for less than a quarter of the domestic mobile device market, which is heavily Android-driven. We also now support the SKAdNetwork network, which Apple allows as an alternative to IDFA to be able to track attribution. Hence, we see ourselves as well-positioned and fully support the initiatives which aim to protect the privacy of users, on which we are highly focused on internally as well. IVAS. IVAS declined 2.3% in the second quarter, mainly as a function of the tough comp from Q2 2020, when revenue growth was almost 17%, which was driven by elevated engagement across social games, stickers, and virtual gifts triggered by lockdowns. Music was less of a growth driver in Q2 2020, given the lower user movement activity at the time. In Q2 2021, there were no mobility restrictions, with user behavior linked to seasonality, which was slightly more pronounced this year given the extended May holidays and extremely good weather conditions. Yet despite the slightly slower than expected H1 start, we continue to expect growth in IVAS for the full year 2021. Importantly, despite a certain remaining IVAS headwind, and with IVAS being almost entirely booked within communications and social, the core segment still significantly accelerated revenue growth to 22% growth year over year in the second quarter versus 8.2% in Q1. On VK. VK remained the growth engine of the group with 35% total revenue growth in Q2, accelerating by 14 percentage points quarter over quarter despite the certain adverse IVAS effect, with VK advertising revenue growth exceeding total VK growth. Although VK is already reaching nearly 50% of Russian internet users every day and 75% every month, average MAU and DAU were slightly up again in the year over year in the second quarter, which reflects our strong competitive positioning. The VK Super App development continues with mini app monthly average users up nearly 30% and approaching 40 million, with daily active users up 60% year over year and exceeding 5 million. We saw a 16% increase in the number of mini apps quarter over quarter to more than 34,000, and 40% year over year increase in the number of apps with monthly average users of more than 1,000. Global video monthly active users reached 75 million in June, with the number of daily video views exceeding 1 billion, and video remaining a major area of focus and investment for us. VK Mobile Games catalog grew nearly 5 times year over year, with 11% year over year growth in mobile games audience in the second quarter. We continue to support monetization of content creators on our platform, with VK Donut already being one of the largest sources of revenues for some VK communities. On games, My Games business managed to deliver 1% growth in the second quarter, exceeding 11 billion rubles, with 18% year-over-year growth for the first half compared to the previous year. Within the mix of revenues, MMO games revenue saw a 6% year-over-year decline in the second quarter. This was expected given the high hurdle rate of 48% growth in Q2 2020, along with no new internal game launches year-to-date versus 5 new game launches in H1 2020. There are additionally no studio acquisitions, as well as the recent IDFA-related changes. However, user trends remain strong with no material change in engagement despite the improved mobility of people, which suggests that the pandemic provided a structural boost to the games market. It is worth noting that 12-month retention of the Q2 2020 cohorts was actually higher than that for Q1 2020 on both Android and iOS, and roughly the same for PC across our entire portfolio. Average Q2 monthly active users stood at 21.4 million, with 1 million in average monthly paying users, and monthly ARPU up 20% to above 170 rubles, with My Games continue to improve monetization through promotions tailored to specific player behaviors, along with active support of the portfolio through more than 30 new updates across the existing titles made in Q2. As an example, our most recently launched game, Rush Royale, continues to do very well, with the number of installs approaching 10 million since its launch in December, with cumulative revenues approaching 2.5 billion, up 20% quarter over quarter, and monthly active users up 40% quarter over quarter, with a peak daily active users exceeding 500,000, with the title being one of the most successful launches in our history. We did not complete any major studio M&A in Q2, but consolidated a couple of small yet promising IPs, namely Global City and Love Choice. These contributed less than 2% of the segment's revenues as a very early stage titles, which we plan to scale inside our games ecosystem. We continue to innovate, experiment, and search for efficient additional sources of growth, with one of our recent initiatives being porting of our mobile games to web using our own international game store to boost internal synergies. War Robots, Warface, Hustle Castle, Left to Survive, Rush Royale, and Guild of Heroes have all been ported year to date, and more are planned for the third quarter, which provides a low-cost boost to revenues of these games. Incremental revenue from ported projects is small, but we're already seeing successful cases like Left to Survive, where web contributes over 10% of the title's overall revenue. Importantly, web is a higher margin revenue stream as well. The IDFA-related changes are having a more pronounced impact on advertising within games, as it is a global business, which is more iOS exposed. Yet advertising accounts for only around 10% of my games' revenues, and hence the impact is manageable, given that we are currently not significantly exposed to casual and hyper-casual games, which monetize largely through advertising and are reliant on constant user acquisition. We are currently focused on the development of new titles, and it is likely that we'll launch fewer titles this year than last year, but we have nearly 20 games in the development pipeline. This leaves significant room for profitable and efficient growth in the coming years. Speaking about the nearest launches, these include World War III, which is a tactical online multiplayer first-person shooter developed by Farm 51 Studio, where we are acting as the global publisher. Blast Brigade, an internally developed 2D action adventure console game, where we're aiming for early access pre-sale launch in the autumn. Pathfinder 2 from our partner studio Owlcout is also scheduled for rollout this autumn, where my games is invested into the game's development and therefore will benefit from royalties from the games. In terms of profitability, my game's EBITDA margin in the second quarter was 24%. That's the highest level since Q4 2019, and even higher than the 21.4% margin we delivered a year ago with the COVID-related traffic support. With margin of almost 19% in the first half, we're on track to deliver year-over-year improvements in profitability in 2021, with likely peak margins for the year to be seen in the fourth quarter, along with further organic growth. Online education. Online education nearly doubled in revenues in the second quarter, despite the 3.6 times year-over-year growth in the second quarter 2020. We're encouraged by the trends we're seeing, as the pace of slowdown is more moderate versus our initial expectations, with a cumulative number of registered students on the two platforms nearly doubling year over year and approaching 1 million in June. Monetization and conversion of registered users into payers also continues, with a cumulative number of paying students at around 240,000, up 2.3 times year over year, including more than 30,000 new paying students added in the second quarter. Given the supportive sector backdrop, we decided to invest into further strengthening our leadership on the professional education market by new vertical experiments, active product launches, hiring and marketing this year, and hence the deterioration in the margin in Q2. It is also impacted by certain taxation regime changes, as well as typical marketing seasonality and no COVID-enhanced organic traffic, as we saw in the second quarter of last year. The business will therefore remain in investment phase for the year, albeit with margin improvement in H2 versus H1. We also now see the segment exceeding $9 billion in revenues for the year versus the previous guidance that we gave of up to 9 billion rubles of revenue. New initiatives, EULA. Growth was around 64% in the second quarter versus 15% in Q1. We know that EULA was the only local classified platform which continued to grow through the pandemic last year with 25% growth in Q2 2020. Integration with VK via VK Classifieds is showing positive initial traction, including as a tool driving EULA audience growth up 15% year over year in June. We also see positive trend in the contributions from VK Classifieds in terms of listings, contracts, and transactions. Integration provides additional liquidity for sellers on EULA, which supports its overall monetization. More than 55,000 VK groups have been integrated into VK Classifieds, but there is room for hundreds of thousands of more, and we see these integrations coming via VK. Despite the encouraging trends we're seeing, at this stage, we reiterate the 3.6 to 3.9 billion top-line guidance for 2021 for EULA, as our major focus remains on audience growth and liquidity coming from our social integrations as a tool for long-term growth and creation of a major competitive advantage for EULA versus peers. We would say that 2021, however, is likely to be the last year of investment in EULA, and after that, it will be self-funding. BK Clips. BK Clips continues to see very good growth, with daily active users up 2.5 times year over year to 20 million in June, and the average video views per day up 3 times year over year to 300 million in Q2. Time spent per user in Clips grew by 36% year to date, with the number of users spending 10 plus minutes per day on Clips rising by almost a quarter. Our recommendation platforms also continue to scale, with 30-plus percent year-over-year growth to 55 million in the average number of people using both Pulse and Relapse in the second quarter. This then drives a 2.5 times year-over-year growth in revenues, supported by continued technological and product enhancements. Growth in time spent is amongst the key KPIs for Pulse for 2021, and it's up more than 30% year-over-year in the second quarter. Marusia usage continues to rise, with monthly active users exceeding 5 million in June, up 10x year-over-year, driven by its integration with BK. Given the progress made across the various new initiatives segment, we saw more than 50% year-over-year growth in revenue, while importantly also reducing the level of EBITDA burn from 45% in Q2 2020 to 37% today. Ecosystem development. We continue to drive cross-asset integrations to boost efficiency of the group through driving not only increased usage and monetization, but also aiming to boost retention and reduce customer acquisition costs. BK Connect is now rolled out across 24 services, having most recently been scaled to MyGames, MyTarget, Samocat, City Drive, and Tetrica. As a result, BK Connect has exceeded 40 million in registrations outside BK in June. This is up more than 20 times what we had in June 2020, and up 40% quarter on quarter. We're further integrating our media services with AliExpress to promote e-commerce. Additionally, the first referral program was launched in OK on the basis of AER, where social commerce users can benefit from extra discounts by broadening reach to the various AER products. Any group in BK now has the opportunity to create its own classified service integrated with BK Classifieds and with EULA. These are just a few of the multiple examples of what we've been actively doing, and we're still very early in the process, and hence it's probably still too early to talk about the broader group level effects, but we're already seeing that a number of services used by an average group user is rising, with some encouraging data points, including the ARPU of BK Connect users being higher than of non-users, with increased conversions into service registrations. We will continue to monitor and update the market on further progress in this area, but we clearly see significant potential. Margins and guidance. EBITDA margins declined year over year in the second quarter, but with a year over year improvement across 2 out of the 4 segments, games and new initiatives, and with improvements shown for the group on a quarter over quarter basis. Going into specifics, CNS margin declined from 48 to 41%. In the second quarter, given the mix shift from certain pressure on the very high margin IVAS revenue stream. Obviously, Q2 2020 saw a disproportionately high amount of high margin IVAS, and hence that needs to be taken into account. This should be less pronounced in the second half. Notwithstanding that, we continue to invest into new products like social commerce, video, messenger, music, and we're not yet forcing active monetization of these, with the focus more on the user experience and rising engagement. Hence, we do not currently project year-over-year margin improvements to the CNS segment in 2021, but with margin improvement quarter-over-quarter expected in the third quarter. Online education will see margin deterioration year-over-year, given the ongoing investments in scaling and the diversifying the business, but with margin improvements in the second half of this year. Games are well set to deliver margin improvements in 2021, along with new initiatives where EULA is moving towards break-even, which should be potentially visible even in the fourth quarter of this year, with 2022 expected to be the first full profitable year for EULA. Overall, we reiterate our guidance to deliver a certain margin improvement for the group, along with revenues in the range of 127 to 130 billion rubles for the overall group. Finally, joint ventures. O2O and AliExpress Russia joint ventures are not part of the consolidated scope of the group, but given the materiality, ongoing investment levels, and impact on our bottom line, we need to provide some additional highlights around both. On O2O, the O2O JV reached 45 billion rubles in GMV, up 75% year over year in Q2. Despite the rising scope, early stage of development of certain assets, supply issues, and extra COVID-related costs, free cash flow burn as a percentage of GMV stays largely flat quarter over quarter at 25% in the second quarter versus 23% in Q1. Delivery Club expanded revenues by more than 40% to 3.6 billion rubles, with 30% growth in orders year over year to nearly 21 million, with also high teens quarter over quarter growth. Using Q2 2019 as a more normalized base, Delivery Club has nearly quadrupled orders and grew revenues 4.2 times since that date. Frequency is steadily going up, rising to around 4.3 orders per active user in the second quarter. Importantly, Q2 frequency was 16% higher than during Q2 2020 at the peak of the pandemic. The number of active users continues to go up, approaching 5 million in the second quarter, up 14% year over year, with over 300,000 new users joining our platform every month. Grocery continues to grow in importance, both as a customer acquisition and retention tool, and with 13% of Q2 orders of Delivery Club being non-restaurant orders. The level of free cash flow burn for Delivery Club was marginally up from 9 to 10% of GMV, with e-grocery and 1P being the main drivers of this. Despite the ongoing investments, burn rates should be declining on a year-over-year basis for 2021. Samarkand grew revenues by almost 4 times year-over-year to 8 billion in the second quarter, with 15.6 million in completed orders, up 4.3 times year-over-year. Dark store base has more than tripled, approaching 700, which makes Samarkand into one of the largest dark store operators globally. Samarkand plans to enter more new cities in the second half. Despite the aggressive regional expansion in Q2, Samarkand free cash flow burn versus GMV has been declining since the formation of the O2O JV, excluding the extraordinary Q2 2020. We should also see peak in the absolute level of burn in 2021. City Mobile completed 50 million rides in Q2, with GMV doubling year over year to 15.4 billion rubles, and revenue increasing by more than doubling year over year, stimulated by the increase in the take rate. The platform saw a particularly fast growth across premium segments and B2B. The burn rate increased quarter over quarter, given the ongoing supply constraints, which was slightly worsened by the rollout of Didi and hence higher competition. However, the level of free cash flow burn versus GMV is largely stable in recent quarters. Looking ahead, City Mobile is focused on further growth, including in B2B, premium, and logistics areas, along with improvements in unit economics. Speaking of overall O2O economics, the absolute level of burn did rise quarter over quarter, driven by the active rollout of Samarkand, as well as rising competition and elevated driver subsidies in ride hailing. But we note that the burn is likely to have reached a peak level in Q2 2021, and we expect a gradual quarter-to-quarter improvement in the second half of this year and ongoing. AER. AER continues to grow at a rapid pace, including triple-digit year-over-year growth for the local marketplaces, with nearly 5x growth in the number of marketplace orders as AER diversifies its base, its SKU base and its product categories. The plan remains to nearly equate local GMV with that of cross-border by the end of the current financial year of AER, which means acceleration in GMV growth for the business as a whole, including multiple times growth for the domestic business this financial year, and they remain on track towards that goal. Amongst the operational focused areas, the company is extremely focused on improving its supply chain and fulfillment offer. Overall, we're committed to support our major JVs with planned total capital allocation of above 20 billion rubles from the group in 2021, including 9.3 billion rubles in loans provided to O2O JV in H1, which are expected to be converted into share capital of the company. That concludes my comments. With that, I thank you. We turn to Q&A, and I would reiterate that we would ask you to ask one question at a time, as this simply makes it more manageable from us from a logistics perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We can go ahead and take our first question from Miriam Adisa with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, everyone. My first question just on the gaming margin. I think Matthew said we should expect peak margins in Q4. So just wanted to get a bit more color on the magnitude of that margin improvement versus the second quarter. Should we look at the fourth quarter in 2019 as a reference point for where margins could get to? And then also sort of linked to that, I know your previous guidance for sort of EBITDA in 2022 for gaming was for that to double versus 2019 levels, and sounds like you're sort of on track or to exceed that target. So would you say that guidance is now quite conservative? Thank you.
Miriam, yes, Matthew, thanks for the question. Yes, look, clearly the shape of 2020 is not a good comparison for anything, and even 2019 had some slightly unusual features too. So I would say if you're looking for a good comparison in terms of the shape of the year from the margin and revenue profile, 2018 is probably a good comparison. As far as guidance goes, I think that the guidance remains realistic, doable, but I don't think it's a gimme, and I don't think it's overly conservative. I think it should be regarded as the most likely outcome.
Great, thank you. And then my second question is just on the associate losses, specifically just AliExpress. Just what are your latest thoughts around the pace of investment that AliExpress is making and when that may need to step up further, particularly just in light of how much some of your peers are investing there?
Yes, I can probably answer this question broadly. So, as you know, AliExpress traditionally comes out of cross-border business, and which is kind of more asset and the general business model-like model. So, it is last year the team did very good job in transferring its business model towards local commerce, which of course requires more investments into the business, into logistics, infrastructure, and the operations. So, and the company plans to continue to ramp up investments, and we obviously support the company as it shows very good results. So, for example, its local marketplace orders, they grew multiple times year on year in first quarter. So they already show a respectable market share in the first quarter. So we plan to continue to support the team and their efforts. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
All right. We can go ahead and take our next question from Cesar Tyrone with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the call and the opportunity to ask questions. I have three questions, so I'll ask them one by one, if that's okay. So the first one would really be on the games segment. Do you expect to significantly accelerate the game launches in H2 this year?
Yes, I will take it. I will take it, Cesar. Thank you for this question. So, as we take a prudent approach towards the gaming, and, gaming is quite, became quite, a marketing-led business to an extent. So we always look at the marketing condition. And so for us, the gaming launch is both a function of the readiness and our conviction that the game is good, and the second it's the condition in the market and our ability to buy enough traffic at good price. So we think that, you know, last year, for example, during the COVID times, the environment for marketing of the games was very good. So the auctions were pretty light for the gaming. So now looking at the rebound in the market, we think it's not a very good time to launch new titles, since the competitive landscape in gaming marketing is quite high. So we probably would be opportunistic. Things are pretty dynamic, but I don't think we have plans to launch and aggressively market something in Q3 and Q4 this year, unless things changed, unless the environment changed. So we are more looking at like probably start of next year. But, at the same time, we have a very high-quality portfolio of about 20 games in development. So, you know, as soon as we see the environment is good for the launch, then we'll launch it, right? So usually we make our decisions depending on business, but not on season or calendar months or something like that. But it looks like it will be more start of next year when we start to aggressively roll out new titles.
Okay.
I think it's
go
also important,
and...
sorry, Cesar, just to add to
go
that,
ahead.
It's nothing related. I mean, it's nothing related to competition or IDFA. I mean, we don't see any significant effect of IDFA on our gaming business. So it's mostly due to the elevation and the cost of marketing, which generally happened in the market systematically with the market rebound.
All right, and again, that is star 1 to ask a question. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We'll go ahead and take our next question from Vladimir Bespalov with VTB Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my question. I would like first to follow up on the margins. If we take your guidance, the margin, the EBITDA margin in the second half of the year should be somewhere close to 30% based on what I calculate. And we saw margins like this back in 2019, and there was a decline, and there is also a change of the revenue mix now with communication and social, the share of communication and social declining, and the margin in communication and social declining as well. So what makes you confident that you can be back to this 30% EBITDA margin in the second half of the year? And maybe you could also, there were some comments from Matthew, but maybe you could also provide some color. Where do you think communication and social could anchor in terms of margins? Because there has been a decline trend for several quarters. Thank you.
I will probably start to answer this question. Thank you, Vladimir, for this question. So generally, looking at the Q1 margin profile, I think it was like a little bit of a perfect storm for two lines of our business, for social and education. So I think that in social, there are three reasons for decline in margins. So the first one, it's we face a pretty high base in IVAS, and I'm talking about like the high margin IVAS, which is not a music type of IVAS, but like gifts and like the gaming type of IVAS in social networks. So they originally were very high during the COVID period when people stayed at home and entertained a lot, hopefully also educated through this IVAS as well. So, and then they spend a lot on this high margin IVAS. So, when people went out of homes and the quarantine ended, people started to use this IVAS less, and hence we have kind of a negative base effect for IVAS. And I think this is kind of one of the aspects that hit the margins. So kind of we lost year on year in terms of year on year comparison and a very high margin revenue component. So here, I mean, going forward, frankly, I think this part of IWAS will be compensated by the music IWAS. because music actually wins from the rebound as people spend more time in mobility and commuting, and therefore listen to more music and consume more music services. But as you know, music is low margin, so this one would not compensate to a big extent this kind of part. But at the same time, I think that there are two important aspects to this myth that are more temporary and make us pretty comfortable in terms of social margin improvement. So one is generally what happened is we still have a hiring overhang from last year. I mean, generally most of the hiring happened last year, but we still see the kind of effect on the costs this year. So we see definitely the effect of this hiring waning in in the near quarters, in the coming quarters. So we think that this cost effect is temporary and it will improve. Generally, the second effect is also one-off. We had some, in H1, we had some, and Q2 especially, we had some marketing investments in some of our new products inside of social, which are kind of more of a one-off. Again, they mostly would not repeat in the second part of the year, but they were also, affecting the social margin. So we think out of the three factors, two are temporary, and we are pretty confident that all the coming quarters we'll see sequential improvement in social margin. So this is in terms of social. I think in terms of gaming, Matthew already made his comment. So in terms of other initiatives, we generally see, even in current results, improvement in results. And as Matthew said in the letter, for example, such quite a big originally cost contributor as EULA is seeing good progress in movement to break even. So we pretty sure that 2022 we will see EULA breaking even. So, and the fourth aspect is education. So education also saw a little bit of miss on EBITDA, which also happens to be part of kind of business seasonality, given all this, COVID times. So generally, it has two major effects. One effect is that the team had very, and I think fully justified, aggressive investments into content. So it was record-breaking quarter for the launch of new courses, 1,000 courses were launched, and we think that these launches paved ground for revenue upgrades going forward.
Apologies, it looks like we just lost Boris. I'm sure he'd be dialing right back in. Could you, just bear with us for a couple of minutes? The joys of remote working from different countries.
Yeah, I guess I can just finish Boris's thought on EdTech. So it's further here.
I'm coming back. Sorry. I'm really sorry. So
okay.
The problems of the remote world. So coming back on education. So the education made very big investments into content. They launched more than 1,000 courses, and we see that it's paving a way for increased revenue for this year. So we think that the 9 billion revenue, which we guided for this year, now looks conservative given this investment. So we just see kind of a lagging effect from this investment. And there is a second factor, which is we have a COVID comparison. So last year, it was actually a story which is quite similar to gaming. We had very low customer acquisition cost. So this year we saw kind of increase in customer acquisition cost. So given kind of probably seasonally highest investment into content and increase in CAC, we saw this perfect storm for margins. And finally, there is the third aspect, which is kind of a transfer of our education business from, like, as they gain more scale, so they exit kind of more light tax regime into more usual business tax regime. And we also, added this to the, it also added to some like a drag on the financial. So generally, we aim to have positive margin at least in the fourth quarter for the education business, and we are very happy and bullish with the way this business goes further. So I think, I mean, I gave you a broad picture of what gives us comfort in margin expansion going forward.
Okay, thank you very much. Very helpful. And can I ask one more question on education technology? I see that the revenue growth is slower than the number of paying students in your EdTech segment. Could you maybe give more color on what's going on there? And do you have to provide like price discounts, or maybe the product mix is changing? What is going on from this perspective?
No, I mean, generally we don't have any trends, changing. So it's just effect of quite a high base. Last second quarter we saw very high growth. So again, we're entering higher base period. This is number one. And number two, the growth, the growth is very correlative with revenue, but it also, everything has a lagging effect because, given that it is a very high check business, it's not like an IVAS where you pay, or it's not a taxi, right, where you pay several hundred rubles for a trip. It's generally a course that can be worth $1,000. So usually the decision making cycle is longer than in other businesses. So it is like some kind of there is a general, of course, correlation, but some short term this correlation is absolutely fine. And generally the growth in students underpins strong demand for education in Russia, for digital education in Russia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go ahead and take our next question from Slava Degtyarev with Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much for the call. My first question would be, is that you mentioned some of the key development areas are video, including clips, also VK Combo, VK Connect, VK Pay, as well as the mini apps and the social commerce. How would you characterize at which investment stage of the cycle are those projects, which are at the early stage of the investment cycle, and you're looking to accelerate investments in the medium term? And where do you think the investment cycle is largely over? And also maybe are there any major product areas you're looking to deploy more capital or incremental capital in the second half of the year?
Yeah, thank you, Ryan, for this question. Can you please, I didn't very well hear like all the services that you mentioned. Can you please again repeat which services you are referring to so I could better address your question?
Yes, sure. So specifically, you highlight them in the press release, your key development areas, which are video, including clips, also VK Combo, VK Connect, VK Pay, mini apps, and the social commerce.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you know, I think in terms of video, we are, you know, at a certain stage, you know, in innovation, of course, investments always continue, but we think that video is already quite a mature product. So we see actually very good, we're starting to see a very good return on investment into this direction via increased growth in video advertisement. So we think that here, in terms of monetization, the model is kind of getting quite mature. We think that in terms of investment cycle, in terms of the size of the team, we're definitely through the peak. So we anticipate some launches going forward. But generally, we think that 2022, in terms of video, should be more of a year of return and no incremental investments. So in terms of VK Connect, I think it's mostly the same. So we already have 40 million people of VK Connect, of VK users, being part of outside of VK using VK Connect, and we already see that together with Comba and other ecosystem products kind of paving very good way for increased synergy and over increase of group products for a user, which increases ARPU. So we think that kind of Connect is also this year is definitely, after this year, we don't anticipate any like incremental increase in investments into this product line. So generally we have a team that would continue to like probably more or less within the current size to upgrade the product like without any significant expansion. So we think that social commerce it is more early stage, despite very good progress in terms of the audience. We're still experimenting with the business model, but at the same time, the investments into this, we operate with not a very big team, so investments into this area should not be very, very big. So mini apps do very well. There are close to 40 million, like 38 million monthly active users of mini apps. And they're actually already profitable within the new initiatives. And VK Comba, it has around 4 million combined users of VK Comba and VK Music. And joint subscribers of VK Combo, VK Music, we already see quite good efficiency of combining Combo and Music, which both increase the conversion and the retention of the music service. So generally, all in all, I think we are, I think 2001 should be like the year of finalizing investments into these areas, and we think that literally in 2021 and for sure in 2022 you would not see any incremental increase of these investments, and you would start to skew towards seeing a return on these investments.
Okay, thank you very much. And the second question would be on SummerCard. Basically, how do you view the addressable market of SummerCard service? What kind of population coverage and maybe number of cities are you looking to have in the medium term? And do you envisage different unit economics in large cities versus the smaller ones? And maybe a few words on the international ambitions of SummerCard as well. Thank you.
I think that in terms of the addressable market, I think that the team has done a phenomenal job scaling Samokat outside of, well, Moscow and St. Petersburg, outside of two big cities. And actually, from what we see now, we do not see any big difference in terms of the unit economics in the new cities and the older cities. And we are already in about, and Samokat is already in about 20 cities, so guys are doing really phenomenal job. So we think that that makes us quite confident in the future of Samokat business. So we strongly believe in it. And we think that generally the total addressable market is literally almost the entire retail market in Russia, if you look 5 to 10 years ahead from now. So, you know, we don't see, you know, any big impediments for them going forward. It will be, of course, a question of continued solid execution. But, you know, the current data makes us very, very positive. So we think that the dark store model and the fast commerce model, it is probably the disruptor in this market. So in terms of international ambitions, as you know, Samokat is limited to Russia, and our kind of current ambition, at least current ambitions, which are outlined in auto strategy, are limited to Russian market, and we are committed to invest to be the leader in the market and to sustain the leader in the Russian market.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we will take the remaining questions from Cesar Tyrone. Please go ahead, Cesar.
Yes, hi again. I have one more question. I think Matthew touched on it, but just wanted to understand better if there's been more cash contribution or more loans to the JV in the past quarter, and whether you do intend to make additional contributions to the JV in terms of capital this year, or if you do intend to lend more money to the JV this year. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. So maybe I will give you a more like a more total number. So I think this year we plan to invest around 22 billion rubles in AliExpress Russia and O2O. Probably we would not disclose the sums by the separate entity and timing, but this is kind of our appetite to invest this year. So we're very excited about both of the assets, about both the growth of this asset, which is also, you know, reflected in valuations of independent of third party independent valuations of like and of different analysts and investment banks. So we generally plan to continue to support this effort. So again, the number for this year should be around 22 billion rubles. I think this is how it looks. I think going forward, you know, that on one hand, we in this market situation is usually pretty dynamic. So it's very hard to make a long-term forecast for any of the business or all the business altogether. But at the same time, given our commitment to fund these businesses going forward, and again, ourselves being very, very bullish on them, it looks like at this point that this year looks like a big investment year of our contribution to them. I mean, it doesn't mean that next year we wouldn't make significant contributions, but I mean, if you look at the total numbers, currently, in my opinion, this year looks like next year we would see a decline in our commitments into these JVs.
Thank you so much. I just want to clarify, is it 22 billion additional contribution from Mail, which you haven't yet made?
No, it's total Mail contribution to O2O and AliExpress Russia this year. So AliExpress Russia contribution hasn't been done yet this year. And generally, we already contributed 9.3 billion into O2O this year already. So you can calculate the rest yourself.
Great. Thank you so much. That was very helpful.
So just to be clear, the total number for 2021, it's around 22 billion for AliExpress Russia and O2O, with 9.3 billion out of them already been made.
That was very clear. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take our next question from Ildar Davletshin with Wood & Company. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So I had two questions. Main question is on the game segment. So it was quite encouraging to see a very strong performance in the second quarter, despite no new launches and lower investments into marketing. I'm curious if you've noticed perhaps any changes in player behavior, so that perhaps there is less attrition or like higher retention rate among existing players, or maybe high engagement, so players spend more time or spend more money on the games playing. And related to that, when you say that second half margins in the game business should continue to improve, do you also say assume a significant decline in revenues, because without new launches, without new investments, and if the consumer behavior hasn't changed dramatically, it may be that you just will lose quite substantial amount of top line, and maybe margin will be higher, but in absolute terms, your EBITDA may be even lower. I would be grateful if you could provide some color on this. Thank you.
So you know, I will answer the first part of the question, and Matthew and Tatiana can address the second question. So generally, you know, we looked at the cohorts, at the retention rate. So in general, if you look at the gaming cohorts, I mean, of course, there is some variance of different cohorts month by month. But in general, we do not see any big divergence in the cohorts. We think that all the previously acquired cohorts look quite good and quite healthy. So there is no divergence or radical changes in behavior, or and there is like nothing wrong with the cohorts previously acquired. So as we said before, the only big radical difference is there is no abnormal, abnormal cool down. You know, everything according to usual seasonality. People continue to love playing games. So the only difference we see, and I just reiterate what we said before, is just different, not in the existing cohort. It's just different in the pace of user acquisition. As like LTV remains quite healthy, but the CAC, customer acquisition costs, go up, we proportionally decrease the spending. This is the only thing that kind of changes. And Matthew and Tatiana will guide you on the second question.
Yeah, if I may comment, I believe you asked about margin potential for games, right? As we said, reiterating our plan for this year, games are extremely well positioned to deliver a year-on-year improvement in 2021. We are firmly on track to deliver this goal. Clearly, how margins will shape up between quarters will depend on launches and therefore our marketing activity. As Matthew mentioned in his speech, there are a couple of titles which could be coming to market, so we recommend the audience to track timing of these launches, as of course this could impact margins between different quarters. But for this year, fourth quarter of the year should again, as back in 2018, should mark peak margins for the year. And in terms of longer-term guidance, again, as we mentioned previously, we target low to mid-20s margins for our games business. We, of course, track all our peers, and we think that these are best-in-class margins for scaled businesses in focused on mobile games with healthy franchise portfolios. We see ourselves benchmarked to these global mobile games leaders, and hence we will deliver a low to mid 20s margin for our games business in the coming years.
All right, thank you.
All right, and we'll take our next question from Sebastian Patule with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for the presentation. Can you please develop more on the competitive pressure in the e-commerce segment and in which areas you're starting to see that competitive pressure, if any? Is it customer acquisition? Is it logistics, logistics employees? Is it engineers? You tell me, please. Sberbank is guiding they'll invest $4.5 billion in the next 3 years in their non-banking business, with a significant part of that going into logistics. Ozon raised almost $2 billion from their IPO and bond sale. Yandex plans to invest $650 million to grow their e-commerce business, while at the same, Wildberry is the local market leader, exists as well, but they seem less focused on Russia now and more focused on the international expansion. So, so I'll be really interested in that, and I also have a follow-up after.
Yes, thank you very much. So, you know, generally, we are very much used. We are one of the, I think, pioneers in both operations and in the investments in the different e-commerce markets, I mean, broadly e-commerce marketplace markets. So, I mean, there is nothing new to us going on. So I think, you know, frankly, I don't see any radical change in the picture different from last couple of years because, you know, again, we are used to operating in inherently, like, competitive, heated, and in some areas also global space. So, you know, in the market, there is permanent competition for IT talent. There is permanent competition for, say, couriers. Of course, there is a huge competition in terms of the quality of tech. Of course, there is competition in terms of marketing and mind share. And, of course, there is competition for the end customers. So, you know, there is nothing new. AliExpress Russia aims to hold 20% of the market when it reaches scale in 2025. So we continue to run for top position in the market as it consolidates. We are one of the biggest players in terms of GMV, and I think we are probably the biggest player in terms of the customer base, which makes us quite optimistic. And as I said before, whenever the asset requires, we are ready to, you know, along with other shareholders to fund the business and its expansion. And already it has proven its ability to almost from scratch start a new line of local business, and we are very happy with the way the business operates.
Thank you very much. I was more trying to gauge, you know, with all of these investments happening in a short amount of time, if you're starting to see any radical price inflation for customers, competing for customers or for logistical employees or for engineers, if you're having trouble to get some of those logistical employees or engineers, or
no trouble, no trouble at all. Again, no trouble at all. You know, we're in this mail is in this market for more than 20 years, and we are actively as mail investing into e-commerce since probably 2015, 2016 into e-commerce businesses, starting with Yula, then with Delivery Club, City Mobile, AliExpress Russia, Pandao, Samarkand. So we have a lot of, you know, experience in this market. We're thinking very, very long term. And there is nothing, radically nothing new that is going on in the market. So all these aspects have been there forever in the market. And as we look at our assets, and here, namely AliExpress Russia, there is nothing which is a showstopper for AliExpress Russia development. So we think we have a very highly qualified team. So just to give you an example, last year, new management managed to hire 500 new local employees for AliExpress Russia, a lot of new talent, ramp up a huge local business. So I think this is a testament to the company and management being very capable to compete in such an environment. And also in terms of marketing, of course, we have, I would say, a double-edged competitive advantage because, again, AliExpress Russia traditionally from its cross-border business has probably the biggest e-commerce transacting user base in Russia. And on the other hand, we have a cooperation with Mail where we do a lot of exercises on the social commerce. So, you know, 27 million transacting users in AliExpress Russia and 92% of Russian internet located in mail.ru. I mean, you are talking about CAC difficulties. I mean, it should not be such a big problem for such an asset. Maybe other companies without a link to such strategic parent can indeed have troubles, but not AliExpress Russia. And you also shouldn't forget that it has Megafon as leading second biggest telco operator as one of its parents, and also it has RDIF, one of the biggest sovereign wealth funds, Russia's sovereign wealth fund, as its one of its parents, and also Alibaba, one of the world's biggest e-commerce players with half a trillion market cap. So I don't think we are scared, and I don't think we should look scared at all.
Thank you very much. That's very clear. And regarding my follow-up, please, from the outside, it started to look like a bit like a busy sector. If you were to pick one operator which won't be in the market 5 to 7 years down the line, which one would it be and why is that, please? Thank you very much.
Sorry, you are talking about e-commerce, right? So if we were 5 to 7
yes.
years. I think, you know, we started to, so the only change that would be if we had an ability to, well, not an ability, if we made up our minds earlier, we would have done the same, but maybe a couple of years earlier. So we are focused on ourselves. We are focused on the assets that we have chosen, and we think we've chosen the best assets possible, and we are focused to how to win with them. So the only thing we would have done, probably it would have been great if we could have started earlier, but, you know, we started when we started, and we have very good and solid market positions. And generally, we try to think not about the past, about the future. But looking at the past, I think it's also very, very good.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, and we'll take our next question from Anna Kurbatova with Alpha Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much. The first thing is a short follow-up on your contribution, capital contribution to JVs. So should we understand it in the point that your 22 billion rubles total contribution this year, it will be only a portion, proportionally you will invest as in the past years along
yes.
with your partners.
Yes.
So we should calculate like proportional, on a proportional basis, the total amount of investments into those assets, right?
Yes, it is proportion. It's just the proportion paid by mail. It is, as I said, around 22 billion. But you should bear in mind that part of it goes to AliExpress Russia, will go to AliExpress Russia, and part of it will go and already went to O2O. So, you know, we cannot disclose any more detail, but hope it helps.
Yeah, sure. Just to understand that the entire, more or less entire amount of investments into this joint ventures. Thank you. And
yeah.
My main question is again with regards to games. It looks like this year My Games is less active in terms of acquisition of new studios compared to the previous 2 years, maybe. So maybe you could make some comment why is that? Because of marketing, of market conditions, maybe you after the COVID like peak in games activity, assets are more expensive, or you are happy with the current portfolio. And just a follow-up, would you reiterate your earlier guidance or ambition to grow into top 25 global games developers in the medium term, long term? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for your question. So on number two, clearly yes, and there is no change. On number one, I mean, I don't think that there is any change in strategy or approach. I think that, you know, there are two factors. One factor is that we already invested in so many studios. So recently we were like, you know, discussing it internally. So we have 45 studios in our ecosystem. I mean, either controlled or where we are invested. So we are not buying for the sake of buying, right? So we are buying for the sake of operating, controlling, and you know, getting high quality games and pipeline out. So we will continue to do so, but you know, we think that we already have, you know, huge assets to operate, right? So we are not in maybe some, like some other players in the market, we are not in a rush to do something, right? We always take prudent approach. We don't want to buy $1 for two. So therefore, we take a prudent approach. So when we see good studio and good deal, we do it. But otherwise, we do not see like any, like not anything mission critical for us in not doing like any acquisitions in the next couple of months, right? That wouldn't affect our business profile, our ability, and our ability to enter like top 25 game studios in the next couple of years. So there is nothing mission critical about that. However, if you look at the market, definitely it is a little bit overheated. I think if you are a new entrant into this market, it is indeed not a good time, because I think most likely you end up having either no deal or overpaying seriously. So we as a company, we always take business-oriented approach, and we would definitely prefer not to overpay for a studio, because again, we have 45 studios in our ecosystem, and this capacity is enough to build a worldwide leader in gaming.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Very clear. Thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Vladimir Bespalov with VTB Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for taking my follow-up questions. I have two small questions. First, you are porting some of your mobile titles to PC. Could you share some experience how this works from the user perspective and in terms of revenue contribution margins? And could it be a big driver for the game segment? And the second one also on the games, when I look at the numbers of paying users, these have been quite stable over the past several quarters with some fluctuations. So basically, the revenue growth is driven mostly by the growing average revenue per user, which is also partly impacted by FX, given that you have a lot of international exposure. In your strategy, do you think this would be possible to grow the number of paying users going forward, and what are the key drivers for revenues in the future for you? Thank you.
Hi, it's Matthew. I'll deal with this one.
I think it's very important that you need to sort of keep things in perspective. While the porting over definitely does have some not only advantages but opportunities for us, the absolute numbers are still relatively small. That said, you know, incremental revenue from porting projects in June grew 7x versus January. So we are actually seeing an impact. Obviously, the margin is better because you're not paying away commissions to the source. And that is the, you know, the primary difference. And in terms of user behavior, the physical porting process over is not particularly difficult. Just about some of the base code and making sure that it works with the relevant engines, especially graphics engines. So this is not a difficult thing. So you know, left to survive now, 10% of revenue is coming from having been ported over to web. I think that we expect that a number of titles can make a decent contribution for this. Is it the primary driver of games growth looking into the next 6 to 12 months? No. That obviously has to be new titles, higher up, and more users. But this definitely is a supporting factor.
Thank you very much, Matthew. And as for the second question, I think, look, there is no special strategy behind either growing via ARPU or penetration of paying users or increase in the general users, where I think we're still very small and the market is very big in terms of gaming, and we have enormous room to grow, we think, in all the three. So now, given that the customer acquisition cost is high, we are more focused on the quality rather than quantity metrics, but again, with new launches or new opportunities and pockets of opportunities in the market, the quantity part of the games business will also increase. So, I mean, but there is nothing strategic here. Probably it's all more tactic part.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, it appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Hammond, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us. We look forward to speaking to you all again after the Q3 results. And in the meantime, if you have additional follow-ups or questions, you know where you can find myself, Tatiana, or the team, and we are always available to you. With that, I would say good morning or good afternoon, depending on your location. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.